Hello and welcome to Beyond Organic Wine. I'm Adam Huss, coming to you from California, the land of fruits and nuts, and I may be a little of both. This is a special episode, and again, something new I'm trying that is kind of an audio investigative journalism slash memoir slash editorial. I have no idea what. I'm calling this piece Wine's F-Word. Wine's F-Word is the word foxy. And I've been on a journey over the last few years to discover the truth about this word. It has been a surprising and surprisingly impactful journey because it turns out that this word is tied up with almost everything that is currently and perennially relevant to the wine industry, because it has to do with deeply held prejudice. And that's why I believe it's important to understand what's going on with this wine term. I don't know of any journey that is more important than freeing ourselves of prejudice. Liberating our minds from the tyranny of misinformation and our own psychological hang-ups may be, I think, the only way that we will be able to adapt, evolve, and survive on a planet that is, you know, wired with a nuclear self-destruct button that has been entrusted to the care of chest-beating apes. In other words, free your mind and life will follow. Part 1, does foxy even exist? Growing up in rural Pennsylvania, a grapevine grew in my backyard. I've since confirmed with my dad that we did nothing to care for that vine. We neither pruned nor sprayed it, yet every year it produced an abundant crop of deep purple grapes with green flesh inside the skins. My mother made a green jelly with them from time to time by pressing the pulp through a sieve, leaving the seeds and skins behind. The first time she made it, she worried that my sister and I wouldn't eat it because it was different from the usual store-bought purple jelly, so she called it monster jelly. We ate it up, of course, and loved it. I'm now pretty sure it was a Concord grapevine, but at the time, I didn't know or care for its name, even less so its genus and species. I snacked on the grapes in late summer, and they linger in some of my earliest and fondest memories of timeless days and seasonal connections, bursts of flavor and sweetness that were real and free and part of the joy of being alive as a kid. I'd mostly forgotten this grapevine when I started this podcast and began learning more and more about hybrid grapes and their wine. The ecological values that fueled my inquiries led me to see how valuable these hardy grapes are and could be to building resilience, adaptability, and diversity into the global wine monoculture. But I heard enough rumors of the F-word to know that I would have to face this question, this excuse or reason for the lack of success of hybrid grapes, and I'd have to eventually confront it. So I began to seek it out. I wanted to confront the big bad fox in all its foxiness and embrace whatever truth I found there. Strangely, I couldn't find it. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if you've never heard of the term foxy applied to wine. It has largely fallen out of use, mainly because the global wine industry has achieved peak vinifera saturation and never discusses wine as wine unless it fits a very narrow vinifera-centric definition. In fact, at first I was afraid that even discussing the F-word with this podcast might act as a kind of revival of a, you know, good riddance, it's dead idea. When I asked a Finger Lakes winery owner if he considered any of his wines to be foxy, he said, quote, "Do people still use that term?" But what I've discovered is that anytime hybrids get discussed by professionals in the mainstream wine culture, 9 times out of 10, the F-word rears its ugly head. And I believe that hybrids are on the brink of being talked about a lot more by everyone in wine. So foxy, just in case this term is strange to you, has been used to describe the aroma and flavor of some wines. What is usually implied, and what you may assume to be implied by this descriptor, are aromas and flavors that are animalistic, scent gland or piss-tinged muskiness, rank and unpleasant. This descriptor has been used to describe hybrid grapes and their wines. In fact, it has been grossly, incorrectly attributed to all hybrid grapes and wine, but I'm getting ahead of myself. With this flavor expectation in mind, I went looking for it in wines made with the hybrid grapes that supposedly imparted a foxy flavor, and I asked for them specifically. I tasted many of these wines, but again and again was confused to find nothing animalistic and funky musky. Instead, I actually found flavors almost opposite this. I found candy-like fruitiness, and for a lack of a better word, grapiness. I began to believe that foxiness was a slanderous myth. than to discredit hybrid grapes. Turns out, I was mostly right. Part 2. What really is foxiness? The problem with getting to the truth about the F-word is that it has been so tied up with deep prejudice and vinifera chauvinism for so long that most of the information you find for it, if you search online, is actually straight-up falsehoods, misinformation, lies. If you do an internet search for foxy wine, pretty much every page 1 through 10 results are negative and provide incorrect information. I recently read the book The Wild Vine by Todd Kleiman. In it, he tells the story of one of the oldest and most widely acclaimed hybrid wine grapes in the world, Norton, which resulted from an accidental cross between Vitis vinifera and Vitis estivalis. As an example of how deeply entrenched the misinformation about the F-word is, he makes factually false references and implications about it multiple times. In referencing the Catawba grape, he says, quote, "There was still the foul, musky taste to contend with, the foxiness intrinsic to all native grapes," end quote. And when he discusses the discovery of the new grapevine Norton, devoid of the foxiness he claims to be inherent in all native grapes, he seems to suggest that the lack of foxiness was a random result of the hybridization with vinifera that caused this, rather than what is actually true, that Vitis estivalis, as an entire species, does not have this flavor. The Oxford Companion to Wine's entry on foxy says that foxiness is the peculiar flavor of many wines, particularly red wines made from American vines and American hybrids. This isn't that bad, despite the gross generalization, but it gets worse. It describes the Concord grape, my childhood vine, as the most well-known foxy-tasting grape by saying the Concord grape, widely planted in New York State, is one of the most heavily scented, reeking of something closer to animal fur than fruit, flowers, or any other aroma associated with fine wine, although the candy-like aroma is, incidentally, quite close to that of the tiny wild strawberry. I won't yet go into the chauvinism implicit in the use of the F-word here. But does this description even make sense? How can a grape, quote, reek of something closer to animal fur than fruit, and also have a, quote, candy-like aroma close to that of the tiny wild strawberry, end quote? Apparently, I'm not the only one confused about the F-word. And I'll come back to whether the aroma described by the F-word can be associated with, quote-unquote, fine wine. For now, let me clear something up once and for all. There is no connection between a grape being a hybrid and it having foxy flavors. None whatsoever. In fact, of the 25 known species of grapes native to North America, only 2 species are known to have flavors referred to as foxy, and those species are Vitis labrusca and Vitis rotundifolia or muscadines. But if the guy who wrote one of the most comprehensive books on one of America's most historical hybrid grapes got this wrong, you can begin to see how unquestioned the misinformation caused by this prejudice actually is. In addition to many samples of Norton, I've specifically sought out samples of wines made from both Labrusca and Muscadines. I've tried Sparkling Concord, that grape known by the Oxford Companion to Wine as the most reeking of foxiness, made by Chepica, Pascaline Lepeltier's winery. And I discovered zero animals, only fruity fruits. Like, again, for lack of a better word, grapey alcoholic grape soda. I may not want this with a steak, but I found it a perfect companion to salad and sandwich lunch. I had a sweet muscadine wine from Arkansas and shared it with many who can attest that it was like drinking candy. My first muscadine wine is still my favorite. It's a wine called Grapes Have Feelings from Botanist and Barrel in Asheville, North Carolina. And you can get this from them. I think the grape juice is blended with apple juice, and the result is a fizzy, delicious thing that I still crave. Zero musk. Try some and see for yourself. I've had wines from Niagara and Catawba from Dear Native Grapes, Brianna from Lagarigista, and others, and all of these grapes had Labrusca in the parentage, but no fox in the bottle. Or at least, not what I expected fox to taste like, and probably not what you would expect either. Each of these have unique flavors, to be sure, but nothing foul, nothing unpleasant even. It turns out that many of the earliest hybrid grapes in the U.S. come from Vitis labrusca, and as an aside, muscadine is used mostly as a pure native, not a hybrid, because it has a unique genetic structure that makes it less likely to cross. In trying to determine where the term foxy even comes from, it's important to know the first name given to Vitis labrusca when European settlers found it growing wild on the East Coast on the U.S. was the fox grape. So was the grape named because of the flavor? It's actually unknown. It's actually just as likely that the term foxy was applied to the unique flavor of the grapes because the vine was known as the fox vine. In other words, the effort might have nothing to do with trying to describe the flavor and only have to do with associating the novel flavor with its source. There are actually many theories about why labrusca was named the fox vine and where the term foxiness came from in the first place. In his book, A History of Wine in America, Thomas Pinney lists at least 8 theories, only one of which is related to the odor or flavor of the grape. I've given a link in the notes so you can read these if you'd like. For now, I'll just mention that the term foxy has been used in many different ways, with many different meanings throughout its history, and there are more uses of it meaning something like wild and pleasantly intoxicating, think Jimi Hendrix's Foxy Lady, than there are pejorative uses. And it's important to understand that while many of the early hybrids were crosses that included labrusca, many of the modern hybrids don't include labrusca at all. And some hybrids have such huge family trees that even though they contain some labrusca somewhere in their parentage, they don't display any of their flavor characteristics. But in my journey, I still wasn't convinced that foxiness in labrusca or muscadine wine, as in the bad thing, a rank odor that is a turnoff, didn't exist. I just began to think that I needed to seek outside of the excellent producers with great winemaking ability that I've mentioned. I thought maybe they're too good at making wine that tastes great, and I needed to find worse producers if I really wanted to find these foxy flavors. At this point in my journey, after tasting all these wines, I'd only found one common flavor, that thing I keep referring to, for lack of a better word, as grapiness. Well, it turns out I keep referring to it this way for a reason. In attempting to isolate the cause of the F-word in grapes, scientists have discovered at least 3 separate compounds that account for the aromas and flavors referred to as foxy. Methylanthranolate, O-aminoacetophenone, and furanial. If you search online for these chemicals, you'll find the following about aminoacetophenone. I wish I could just say that, roll that right off the tongue. Orthoaminoacetophenone has an odor similar to that of methylanthranolate and is chemically structurally similar. So let's go to Wikipedia about methylanthranolate. Pure, it has a fruity grape smell at 25 parts per million. It has a sweet, fruity, Concord grape-like smell with a musty and berry nuance. Well, there you go. It continues. Dimethylanthranolate, DMA, has a similar effect. It is also used for part of the flavor of grape Kool-Aid. It is used for flavoring of candy, soft drinks, as in grape soda, fruit, as in grapes, and chewing gum and nicotine products. And then Wikipedia on furanial says, furanial, or strawberry furanone, is an organic compound used in the flavor and perfume industry. Although malodorous at high concentrations, it exhibits sweet strawberry aroma when dilute. It is found in strawberries and a variety of other fruits, and is partly responsible for the smell of fresh pineapple, end quote. What you don't find in the wiki entries is any reference to the term foxy. Concord grapes are even mentioned in conjunction with the chemical that has been isolated as the origin of the infamous foxy flavor of these grapes, yet the only mention is a sweet, fruity, grape-like smell with musty berry nuance. Or, for furanial, a sweet strawberry aroma. I don't know about you, but that sounds pretty good to me. In fact, it sounds really good, like something that people around the world would love. As it turns out, they do. Part 3. What if foxy is not a flaw, but a feature? 2 weeks ago, my friend Ryan Opaz, who you may remember as the co-author of the books Foot Trodden and Amber Revolution, among others, and former sponsor of this podcast through his company Catavino Tours in Portugal, came to visit me here at Piscinas Ranch and poured 2 wines for me that were like the treasure at the end of a long quest. He actually poured quite a few incredible wines that were like the treasure at the end of a long quest, but these stood out because of the subject matter that I'm talking to you about now. And if you want to have your wine mind blown, you should probably go visit Ryan at his shop in Portugal. But one of the two wines that I'm talking about specifically was from the Azores, that archipelago in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, where the viticulture is some of the most extreme I've ever heard of. The other was from Kerasis Wine in Turkey. I interviewed Gizem, one of the partners of Kerasis, for this podcast not too long ago, and that's definitely worth checking out. And what they are doing is pretty cool. They're making wine from only married vines, or vines growing in living tree trellis partners. And the tree vine partnerships they harvest from are over 100 years old. So both of these wines were made with a really special grape. Both the one from the Azores and the one from Turkey, are made from a grape known as Isabella. The Isabella from the Azores was tried by more than just me, so you don't have to rely on my sole testimony. But I would describe it like a bright, deep rosé in color, with what I associated with a strawberry candy aroma and flavor, and something, just a hint of something a bit deeper and non-fruity too, that made it really incredibly compelling for me to balance that sweet, fruity candy-likeness. That non-fruitiness was sort of like the sear on a grilled salmon. It's the best description I can give you for it. Now, Isabella, the grape that was responsible for these two wines, is a hybrid of vinifera with Labrusca from the U.S. So how did it get to the Azores and Turkey over 100 years ago? This question led me to do a lot of research, or a bit, to discover that Isabella is actually a global grape. It's the most planted grape in Brazil and Colombia, as of the last accounting. I mean, who knew? Believe it or not, the French are likely responsible for it being in Turkey today. They exported so many vines throughout the Black Sea, that Isabella became locally known as Odessa, the port that it came through. It was honored by poets, planted and vinified in every culture around the Black Sea, and traveled the globe, and was ultimately then made illegal in France and prohibited from ever being used in French wine since 1934. I'm no historian, and there's a lot of history in just this one grape, so I encourage you to do your own research on Isabella. It's a fascinating history. The authors of the wiki on Isabella exhibit the prejudice of the F word supremely. They go to great lengths to malign the grape in the very first paragraphs of a quite lengthy entry by saying, quote, "The Isabella, Vitis crossed Labruscana, being of hybrid parentage, imparts a foxiness to the wine, and because of this is thought to be objectionable. Therefore, it is not seen as a grape capable of making fine wines. For the table, the flavor is good, although the tough, astringent skin and foxy aroma are objectionable to some tastes," end quote. There are several issues with this first paragraph. First, Vitis crossed Labruscana doesn't make sense. Vitis is a genus, while Labrusca is a species. This betrays the vinifera prejudice behind the author of this little piece as much as anything. Second, the clause, being of hybrid parentage, which leads to its, quote, objectionable character, is so bigoted as to be alarming. Imagine speaking about people this way. It's both ugly and inaccurate, because it implies the fact of being a hybrid imparts a negative quality to a grape, in this case, foxiness, and which, as I've already mentioned, is completely and even maliciously false. With these slanders of Isabella as a foxy grape, and I found them throughout my research, I began to wonder why a grape like Isabella, with such widely touted objectionable aroma flavors, managed to spread around the globe. Was it its hardiness? Was it some other quality about it? Its abundance and productivity? Again, I'm no historian, but could the widely accepted maligning of Isabella have anything to do with France's ban on hybrids in 1934? Could it be that prejudice was used to support a political and economic agenda? Could it be that France and the English, who facilitated the French wine cultural exports as the sources of our modern wine monolith, might have had some influence on the telling of wine history? Further, does it seem reasonable that the French would export huge numbers of vines that they thought tasted terrible? Sure, it's prolific, hardy and resilient, and made vinifera look like a sickly, weak, temperamental prima donna. But would it have been adopted so readily in so many diverse nations if its flavor reeked of foulness? When you look at the history of Isabella, a reputed foxy grape, and the way it swept the globe and still persists, doesn't it make more sense that its success was because of its flavor rather than in spite of it? I'll just add one more bit of trivia for the record. The most planted grape on Earth right now is a hybrid grape with Labrusca in its parentage. It's known as Kyoho. You can look it up. I'm sure the most popular grape in the world must taste terrible. Part 4. Sense perception is neither simple nor objective. Or chauvinism coup de grace. And I used French there intentionally. So what if Foxy is real? What if it's not a product of viniferous chauvinism? Much evidence suggests that there really is a musky aroma that was at some point in history associated with the F word. And one of the compounds that may be responsible for foxiness can be found in the scent gland of a weasel, which, while not a fox, is pretty evocative. But even if we assume we can find some musky scent in some of the so-called foxy wines, so what? As my Wiccan friend said when she was called a witch by a fundamentalist, you say that like it's a bad thing. How different is the term foxy from the terms gamey and leathery which we apply to Syrah? How different is it from the mushroomy humus aromas we associate with Pinot Noir? Why is foxy Isabella bad but Tarry Nebbiolo good? The more we learn about how we perceive aromas, the more it becomes clear that most of what we think we know when we taste wines is, to put it scientifically, complete horseshit. At a molecular level, we know that a wine can contain hundreds of flavor molecules, close to 1,000 actually, that we know of. We also know that between any two people, there's an average of a 30% difference in our receptors for these aromas. That means that a whole chunk of things that you perceive, I can't, and vice versa. We also know that the same molecules make up very different smells. Remember my mention of one of the foxy compounds, furanone? It's a compound that makes up both strawberry and pineapple aromas. Our cultural associations, whether your grandmother served you a bowl of fresh strawberries or chunks of fresh pineapples for a snack, can determine what flavor you identify in a wine. And both can be correct or incorrect because you've only identified your association with one molecule in that aroma and not the majority of other molecules that make up what you smell as pineapple or strawberry. In a room of 20 people, if you give them all an unfamiliar scent molecule to describe, you'll get 20 different descriptions. And if you blend two scent molecules that everybody in the room can identify and are familiar with, once blended, they won't be able to determine from sniffing the combined aroma what either of the original aromas were. And we know that your mood, your level of hunger, what you just had in your mouth, your biochemistry, and your memory associations all change what you smell and taste. And we know that what you perceive with your other senses has an immense impact on what you smell and taste as wine. From the kind of music you listen to while drinking wine, to the setting in which you drink the wine, to your awareness of its price, to the look of the label, and the color of the wine. The color of the wine study is one of the most damning of our ability to produce anything beyond, again scientifically speaking, horseshit when describing the taste of a wine. In this simple study, repeated multiple times, tasters are given a red wine to blind taste and describe. Only after they finish describing the wine as jammy and full-bodied and red-fruited and plummy is it revealed that it wasn't a red wine at all. It was a Chardonnay dyed red. Try this on your unsuspecting wine friends yourself. It works every time. All that is to say that what we know is that we don't know much at all and that our judgment is extremely suspect in matters of taste and smell. So when someone describes a wine by saying, "This smells like X," whether that X is fruity or foxy, the statement requires a lot more investigation to understand than we have commonly thought. Tasting and smelling are incredibly complex sensory experiences that are tied up to our personal histories, psychologies, values, beliefs, cultures, and what the person we just kissed had for breakfast. And we know this, yet we still use a tasting wheel and believe it when someone critiques a wine for being foxy. The problem, as I see it, is that as long as we cling to the assumptions of objectivity in the assessment of wine flavors and the values attached to them, we will continue to be susceptible to being used as tools in someone's political, economic, or personal agenda. If we don't embrace complexity, we will continue to make choices that are influenced by prejudice. One of the other findings that we now know about our senses relates directly to my personal quest to understand wine's F-word. The perception of a smell changes with the concentration of the responsible molecule. For example, one of the odorants that causes the smell of grapefruit starts to smell sulfurous in larger concentrations. As an aside, is the word grapefruit the stupidest word ever? It's redundant, and it isn't what it says it is. Can we all just shift to using pamplemousse or something instead of grapefruit? Grapefruit. Anyway, this change in perception based on the amount of aroma compound may be part of why foxy aromas have been so elusive to me. The Wikipedia entry on Ferragnol does mention malodorous at high concentrations. This may give some insight into how these grapes could both have a very positive and very negative reception, depending on the specific level of the compound in a specific instance, as well as, it's important to note, the sensitivity of the person smelling it. The same molecule can be responsible for very delicious and very repulsive aromas, simply based on concentration. That means that even grapes with strong aromas that some may consider malodorous could have the potential to make incredibly yummy smelling and tasting wine simply through winemaking techniques. This has clearly been proven to be the case with many hybrids with Labrusca parentage, if foxy is a real thing. If I'm honest, it's entirely possible as well that the Concord vine I grew up with conditioned me to the foxy aroma. My psychology was formed with fond memories of all the sensory experiences that vine gave me, and that could have predisposed me to love foxy wine. And so what if it did? That vine is entwined in the forest of my memory. It wound through the culture that helped shape me. It provided an integral part of my family connection. Those flavors have become part of me. Should I now hate them because they don't fit some bigot's definition of, quote, fine wine? Should I now think of my tastes as unrefined, as coarse? Should I refer to myself as having an uneducated palate? And whose education, whose culture shall we determine is valid and exclusively worthy of value? The reality is that most people talking and writing about the F-word have never grown or made wine with the Vitis labrusca family or of grapes or other grapes referred to as foxy. Most have never even drank a wine made from these grapes. And so they merely parrot the F-word because it has never been questioned before. They've never actually tasted foxy before, or they might just be as confused as I was. If you haven't tried these wines, I hope you will. Don't be afraid of the anti-foxy propaganda. Maybe you won't like them. Maybe you will. Vive la différence. I just hope you are now armed with a strong dose of inoculant against prejudice. Because it is definitely time to stop incorrectly claiming that all American native and hybrid grapes have the same flavors. And it may be time to start seeing the F-word as ignorant at best, and start reviewing our sacred wine texts for chauvinism disguised as assessment. It's possible we need to re-examine our use of this word with a careful eye to how much unconsidered prejudice it embodies. But it's also possible, when we've actually started tasting some hybrid grape wines, that we may discover that foxy is a compliment. The end. Thanks so much for listening. I really enjoy writing these things, and I hope you enjoy listening to them. I really appreciate you being part of this podcast by supporting it and listening to it. And please spread the word if this is something that resonates with you. If you think other people would benefit from hearing this, please share it. And I also would really appreciate your feedback and questions if you have any. So you can email me at connect@organicwinepodcast.com. Also, our webpage is beyondorganicwine.com, where there's a support page where you can get all kinds of easy or complicated ideas about how you can support this podcast, all of which are vital, necessary, greatly appreciated, and make this podcast possible. So thank you so much for your support. It's extremely meaningful to me.